Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Speaking plain and to the purpose, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Friday, November 28th, 2025, for our communication article for the month of November in your trusty Advanced magazine. The article is called Simply Speaking: Why Using Complex Language Doesn't Always Make You Sound Smarter. And so we will be reading through this article today and tomorrow, and help you understand some of the vocab in it, discuss some of the ideas, help you practice listening to some English and growing in your confidence in English. And hopefully we will do it all simply, straightforwardly, in terms of how we speak. In keeping with the title of our article, Simply Speaking. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist. Joining us for both days of this article is Gabe. Hello, Gabe.
Hello, Peter, and hello, everyone.
Good to have you with us, Gabe. Gabe, our article is called Simply Speaking, but one of the issues it touches on, or I shouldn't say an issue, one of the qualities that it touches on, a theme that we'll find in our article over these next 2 days, is the theme of credibility, being credible. And so just off the top of your head, I haven't told Gabe about this ahead of time, so he's going to be thinking extemporaneously. There's a nice complex word, just means to think off the top of your head without planning. Gabe, what makes a person credible?
Well, what comes to mind is expertise, background, you know, what they have studied, what they have experience with and dealing with. And those are some things that I think make people credible. And I think credibility, the idea of being credible or believable to others, is something that most experts should aspire to. You want to be credible.
Yes. No, I would certainly agree with you. And just to be clear, when we say credible, that means capable of being believed, you know, trustable, a credible witness in a courtroom setting, we might say, or a credible threat of a weather system, perhaps, is a threat or a witness that is believable. Anyone can say, oh, yeah, I saw him commit the crime, but, it turns out that this person isn't very believable. They see a lot of things,
yeah.
So they would be not a credible witness.
That's
if their
right.
background was discovered.
That's right. If someone is constantly telling lies or they're known to be dishonest,
then
they're not a very credible person.
Exactly. But I like your answer there, Gabe, where you said that at least one thing that builds credibility is your background, your expertise, your training, your education.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Those go a long way to establishing, if I need a doctor and someone tells me, oh, I'm a doctor, and he's got a diploma from Harvard Medical School on his wall, that enhances his credibility more so
sure.
than just him saying, I'm a doctor.
Yes.
I think for me, in addition to what Gabe said, I think another thing that makes a person credible is that they do what they say. They follow through. You know, if they say, I can deliver this package for you, by 4 o'clock, and they get it there by 4 o'clock, that makes them credible. It's a small thing, you know, just delivering a package, but it does mean that if I need a package delivered again, I know that this person is credible because they have proven what they claimed to be able to do.
Yeah, for sure. And that borders, and that goes into the territory of a related word, which is reliable. The idea of reliability. Are you able to, follow through on your promises and
exactly.
what you have said that you're going to do? The idea of credibility came up recently in a conversation with someone else, actually, whose work I was proofreading. And this person likes to use a lot of exclamation marks. And this person is very excitable in general and loves to come across as very excited. He's a very passionate person in general anyway. And I said, okay, you know, maybe take out a few of these exclamation marks. There were a couple of sentences back to back that had exclamation marks. And when you're reading something, you do want to feel excited or interested in what you're reading, but you don't necessarily need to be told by the exclamation mark itself. And I think that's what some writers do. They will try to emphasize, oh, you should be excited about this idea. I'm going to put an exclamation mark here.
Right.
And what I told him was actually you can lose credibility that way. I think the reason is when, you know, people lose credibility by adding too many exclamation marks is because A, it looks unprofessional to have all the exclamation marks, but also another reality is that we're not constantly in real life excited by everything.
Exactly, yes.
And so
in real life, things are pretty dull a lot of the time.
And so when someone, you know, sees a piece of writing where there's a lot of exclamation marks, it might make you think, well, how genuine is this person? Is he really being sincere about all of this excitement, or is he putting on kind of a show in some way?
Right. Is he trying to, or is he trying to make me like his ideas more than I would if I hadn't been sort of pushed into liking them by the exclamation marks?
Yeah. And the only reason I bring this up is because a lot of our listeners may be in fields where you have to do a lot of writing. And that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Yes.
You know, be very careful with how you use exclamation marks. And don't use them too much.
Definitely. Yeah. In fields where you have to do a lot of writing, in fields even where you do a lot of speaking, which brings us to our article for today. It's thought often that one way to enhance your credibility is by using large words, complex words. We'll unpack this idea a little bit more, but that's sort of the connection that we're going to make here, is just thinking about credibility and how that can affect our speech, how it can affect our writing, as Gabe was just saying, and how it affects, obviously, how people perceive us and whether they do perceive us as credible or not. So with that, hopefully your appetite is whetted for our communication article here. Let's open your magazines, if they have not already been opened, to day number 28, November 28th. We will do two readings today, and let's then begin with our first section now.
Simply speaking, why using complex language doesn't always make you sound smarter. People are often under the false impression that making their language complex or using jargon enhances their credibility. That might be true in certain circumstances. If you're an academic talking to other academics or a software engineer talking to other software engineers, using jargon makes sense. However, if you're talking to people outside of your field of expertise, it can alienate them. And when you alienate someone, it can cause them to switch off. It also reduces the likelihood that they take away anything useful or do what you'd like them to do. That's probably the last thing you want to happen when communicating with someone. So if you're prone to using jargon, you might want to consider taking the time to figure out how to communicate in simpler language.
Okay, and right off the bat here, in the first part of our section, we are introduced to the idea of a false impression. A false impression, a misleading understanding, an incorrect understanding of something. And Gabe, what is the particular false impression that our author is presenting us with?
Yes, it's the impression or the idea that making your language complex enhances your credibility. And we also see this word jargon here, this key word. Jargon usually means words or expressions used in a particular field by a particular group of people. And if you're not in that field, then you probably won't understand it.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's the word jargon itself is used kind of in a disapproving kind of way. It's not really a neutral word. If a person says, oh, yeah, he just started going into all this technical jargon, that's not a compliment. That's not just a statement of fact that he suddenly began to talk about concepts specific to that field. It means that he lost me, basically, when he got into all this jargon.
And that's the idea in our lesson, right?
Exactly.
The idea of losing people in communication. You don't want to lose people.
Exactly.
You want them to follow along clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Now, having said that, however, in the very next paragraph, our author says that might be true in certain circumstances. Now, what is that in this case? Well, that is that using complex language and jargon does enhance a person's credibility. And so the author began by introducing that as a false impression, but now right in the next paragraph he says that might be true in certain circumstances. What is the example, one example he gives of such circumstances, Gabe?
Yeah, he has a couple of examples, and we could come up with more. If you're an academic, that means working probably in doing a lot of research and a lot of reading, writing, talking to other academics, or if you're a software engineer, probably doing a lot of coding and having to deal with a lot of, computer terms, then using jargon makes sense when talking to those people who understand all of those words, because each of those words has nuances.
Exactly.
You can't just use general words that other people would understand.
Right. You will be able to communicate more thoroughly
exactly.
with people by using that jargon.
Yeah, with those people in those fields.
With those people, right.
Yes. However, it says if you're talking to people outside of the area of expertise, that can alienate them.
Yeah. Now, does that mean turn them into little green men who fly around in a saucer?
I wish, Peter.
Wouldn't that be a great world?
That would be great. If that's how we could make people turn into aliens.
Just by using big words.
Yes, yeah. We should write a book, a novel. That's a good idea about how using big words can turn people into aliens.
Aliens.
But the idea is that if you're alienating somebody or a group of people, you're doing something that makes, someone feel uncomfortable and not know how to really get involved. And really, they don't feel like they can be a part of anything you're doing.
Right. It puts a distance between you and the person when you alienate someone. And this can be done on an individual level. This can be done on a group level. When a politician running for office gives a particular speech, says a certain thing, we find out later that he alienated a whole group of voters who disagree with him on that point. You'll hear the word used in that way, too. It just means that, they don't really like him as much anymore. They're not sure how they feel about him. They are alienated from him. You can hear the meaning of it. It means that a person they thought they knew, thought they trusted, maybe even thought of as a friend, is now an alien, an outsider.
That's
someone
right.
not connected to them. So to alienate someone is to alien, obviously someone who lives on Mars, goes around in a flying saucer, is someone outside of human society. So that's why the word alien is used to describe the little green men from Mars as well. But it has this broader meaning about just someone who is no longer a friend or a companion of sorts. And so the article goes on to say when you alienate someone, it has a very specific effect here in terms of communication. What is that effect?
Well, I like the term that our writer uses, switch off. It causes people to switch off. And basically, that could mean kind of to turn off your brain and the way that you're receiving information.
Right, right. You just sort of keep smiling and being polite, but you're not really taking in the words anymore.
Exactly.
Because that alienation has happened.
That happens, Peter, when also, when we're in a group of people who are speaking a language that is not our own, right? You want to be part of the group, but if they're using words in that language that are too high level, then they're not doing it on purpose.
Right, right.
And maybe you're actually the outsider. You're joining the group as the only person who speaks English, and there's a group of Chinese speakers, right?
Right.
And everybody else is speaking Chinese. You want to follow along and keep up, but at a certain point, if there are too many high-level words you don't know, you just switch off.
Because, exactly.
And the reason is not because you don't want to be involved, but because it's exhausting. It's tiring. That's why
you just don't have the bandwidth, as one of our coworkers likes to say. In terms of the paragraph winds up here by saying that is the last thing you want want to have happen when you're communicating with someone, to have them switch off and stop listening because they feel alienated by your choice of words. So if you're prone to using jargon, if you're prone, a word simply means if it is a habit for you, if it's something that you often do, you're prone to something. If you're prone to using jargon, you might want to consider taking the time to figure out how to communicate in simpler language. So let's go into our second section now. It's a little bit longer than our first one, and we'll get to the better understanding of why people use complex language in the first place. We already know that they feel it may enhance their credibility to use complex language, and that that is the case in certain circumstances. But let's burrow a little deeper into this idea by going into our second reading now.
Why people use complex language. Many people often use complex language because they're insecure. When a person ties a big part of their identity to academic prowess, but they don't feel particularly successful, they can use complexity to serve as a security blanket that hides them. It's a way of making people perceive them as clever or even obfuscating the truth. After all, it's a lot harder to question or challenge something that your conversation partner doesn't understand. Secondly, many gifted executives simply lack social awareness. Unfortunately, many leaders don't give emotional intelligence the same weight they assign to developing technical expertise when climbing the corporate ladder. Quite simply, that means that there's a disconnect between what you find meaningful and important as the communicator and what your audience finds meaningful. And when you choose to ignore the audience's perspective in your communication, issues arise. If you want the audience to listen to what you have to say, you need to consider how your audience would prefer to consume the information. Once you have that information, you can present the information in a way that will engage them and make them more likely to listen to you.
All right, so right up front here, one of the reasons the author gives as to why people use complex language, why they use jargon, is that many people do it because they're insecure. And he gives an example right there. Gabe, what is the example?
Sure. So a person might tie a big part of their identity to academic prowess. Prowess is just the idea of having a great skill at doing something.
Right.
And so another way to phrase this is that people want to be perceived as being highly intelligent.
Right.
I think that's what it is.
Exactly. And it's key that he says a person ties a big part of their identity to academic prowess, but they don't feel particularly successful. So it's not that it's bad to have prowess, to have great skill at something in your field of study, and, you know, academic or otherwise, but if that's a big part of how you understand who you are and how you sort of get your confidence, get your sense of self-worth, and yet you don't feel like you're very successful in that field for whatever reason, despite your prowess, then people can sometimes use complex language as a sort of security blanket that hides them or gives them comfort, gives them a little bit of that strength back, a security blanket, of course, like a blanket that a child carries around to make them feel secure when you're, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old. Gabe, you have a few young ones in your house. Do any of them have a security blanket?
You know, we say security blanket for anything that represents the thing that gives the child security.
Right.
But my son has a security pillow.
A security pillow, sure.
Yeah, you know,
exactly.
And my cousin growing up had a security blanket, and she would suck her thumb while holding on to the security blanket. And I remember me and my other cousins would take it from her to make her frustrated, you know.
Oh dear. I know that's the thing when someone's got something as a small child that it becomes a target.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interesting, though, in our next paragraph here, the author goes on to say that using the language is a way of doing actually two things. First, first, it is a way of making people perceive the person who uses the big language. It's a way of making other people perceive them as clever. Mm-hmm. But it could also be used for what, Gabe?
For intentionally or deliberately making something unclear or difficult to understand. That's the idea behind that word obfuscating, is doing it on purpose.
Right, right. If you don't completely understand what someone said, mm-hmm. you're much less likely to challenge it. Because you don't know what it is. And there's that thing we all feel where we don't want to appear dumb. We don't want to appear ignorant in some way. So even if it's a field we've never studied before, that can make it a little easier to say, I don't know what you're saying. But if it's maybe an adjacent field to ours in some way, it's very easy to just sort of nod our head and not know what's being said, but not want to challenge or even question.
And I think that politicians do this sometimes too.
Oh, sure.
When they're intentionally being ambiguous about something, and they may respond to something, you know, a question being asked by obfuscating the truth.
Yes. You know? Oh, sure. No, politicians, lawyers sometimes have a reason to obfuscate the truth in their presentation of evidence or in their questioning of a witness.
Or withholding evidence.
Withholding evidence even. Yeah. No, that's a whole nother conversation, a fascinating one. But anyway, just looking at reasons why people would use complex language in the first place, what it might achieve for them. In fact, in the third paragraph, then, it gets more into another core reason why people use complex language. It says many gifted executives simply lack social awareness. They lack social awareness. And there's social awareness is a term that can be defined in many ways. I mean, it doesn't have many different meanings, but basically, it means the ability to see things from another's perspective.
Sure.
To be aware of others. And when you're talking about others, you're talking about a social situation. It's not just you. It's you and other people.
Yeah.
You know, society.
Sure.
Social. So social awareness is an awareness of other people. The word empathy, is often brought, is a category of social awareness. And it's this insight here that these gifted executives, otherwise very talented, unusually talented men and women simply lack social awareness.
So they don't know. They can't pick up on the fact that their listeners can't follow along.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they don't do it on purpose. And maybe these guys are so gifted because they've spent a lot of time in school learning all of these high level words and this jargon.
And not learning how to talk to people.
Exactly. We all know of people who are really gifted at what they do, but they can't teach other people.
Right.
You just want to watch, you know, there are some, like for example, I'm a drummer. Uh-huh. There are some drummers that I really enjoy watching, you know, play by themselves. But then when I go on YouTube and I see them trying to explain stuff, I realize they're not actually a good teacher necessarily.
Yeah. They'll just be like, well, I, you know, just sort of feel the rhythm in my hands and I go along with the music and what the guy's trying to express. And that's all good and it's all probably true, but that doesn't help me become a better drummer.
Right, and on vice versa, you have people who aren't necessarily great and yet they really know how to communicate the basics.
Yes.
And so I think this article is talking about, you know, the former, the gifted executives. And, you know, Peter, there's another kind, I think, reason why people might use high-level language, and that is simply because they love the language.
Yes.
For example, I knew someone, you know, a long time ago. She was like, I heard her on our campus at school when I was in high school. She was much younger than me. I was probably in high school. I think she was in elementary school at the latest, you know. And I heard her walking by with her mom. And she was walking a little slower than her mom. She felt her mom was walking too fast. She goes, Mother, slacken thy pace. So, means slow down. It just means slow down. To be slack means to be slow.
The way William Shakespeare might have said it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, like maybe her parents were trying to get her into Shakespeare in that kind of language. And so she was using it.
So
she loved it.
You may have heard an example of successful parenting just
right.
then. But, there is more, I think, to this topic even than this article covers. But here in the paragraph, it just makes the point that as a result of these executives lacking social awareness, there will result in, right in the middle there, that there is a disconnect between what you, the executive, find meaningful and important as the communicator and what your audience finds meaningful, that there is a disconnect. And you can see that simply when two groups no longer understand or have a relationship with each other, they no longer have a connection. There's a disconnect there. We use it in the noun form here, between what you think is important and what the audience thinks is important. And one quick note here, audience here does not necessarily mean we're talking about giving a speech to a room full of people.
Right.
You could have an audience of two people. Audience just means whoever is listening to you at the moment. Could be 2,000 people, could be just two people. And so that's important to keep in mind in the article, which we have just about come to the end of today in terms of at least our time to discuss it. The article will continue tomorrow, and we encourage you to come back and join us tomorrow for the remainder of the article, when we'll get some practical advice from our author about how to communicate more simply. If you are yourself, one of those gifted executives, or just any person who lacks social awareness, or who lacks enough social awareness to be able to communicate better, come back tomorrow and we'll try and help you become a better communicator. But for today, we must bid you adieu. I'm Peter.
And I'm Gabe.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.